Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We are going to focus our attention on the Toyota of Hollywood hotline because our friend Brian Geltzeiler is with us. You can follow him on Twitter at HoopsCritic. See him all the time on NBA TV and hear him on SiriusXM NBA Radio. What's happening, Geltzy?
Hello, gentlemen. How we doing?
Always excited when we get to talk to you. And you got the conference finals beginning tonight and tomorrow. Let's look at the two conference finals, East and the West. So the West tonight, Golden State and Portland. There's a little bit of excitement. We were talking about this yesterday. A little bit of excitement over Portland, seeing somebody new, maybe Dame Lillard. But there's also this added, I don't know, intrigue, right, of Golden State doing it without KD. And showing that, hey, we've done it before, we could do it again. Where are you leaning on that series?
Well, I'm so squarely with Golden State. I just do believe that, you know, one of the things that happened, and I don't know that we can take what went on in Game 6 of the Houston series and superimpose that onto this entire series, in the respect that Golden State has had problems finding viable rotation players in terms of depth. Depth has been a big issue for them. And one of the things I looked at when Golden State was coming into that Game 6 against Houston was, well, listen, I wasn't so much worried about the offensive effect of not having Durant, because when you increase the usage of Curry and you increase the usage of Klay Thompson, they're going to do it almost as efficiently, if not as efficiently, as Durant. So none of that was all that surprising. But I looked at it and said, all right, well, who are they going to give those extra minutes to? Is it going to be Bogut? Is it going to be Jericho? Is it going to be Bell? Is it going to be Quinn Cook? Well, Steve Kerr answered my question with all of the above. And he went deep into his bench and valued fresh legs in that series, rightfully so, a lot more than he valued having that one guy. Well, okay, we've had a couple of days to rest. And granted, Portland hasn't really had that after an emotional Game 7 win on Sunday. But Portland is a little bit of a deeper team here. And I give Neil Olshey a ton of credit, man. He has managed to, with guys like Enes Kanter and Rodney Hood, and to a lesser extent, Evan Turner, who he invested hard in, guys that teams had kind of like left for dead and like they were nothing. He's managed to make these guys into really important pieces and important parts of his team. I think Portland hangs in a little bit in this series. I'm picking Golden State in six. I think Golden State still wins this series. I'm picking that Golden State in six with the assumption Durant doesn't come back, because I do not think they will rush Durant back at all. I don't think it makes any sense to rush Durant back. The one thing I will tell you about Golden State, they certainly appeared more connected without Durant. However, as you get into a series, that depth thing is going to definitely kind of rear its ugly head for them. I still like Golden State, but I do think we'll see a little bit of a competitive series here. I really do.
Gil, I like the way you put it. They look more connected, because we were talking about it yesterday. I enjoy watching Golden State more without KD, because the ball movement, it's a pretty game. That's the best way I can put it. Do you think Klay and Steph and Draymond and them, they'll never say it, do you think they enjoy playing without KD?
100% Crowder. 100% they do. Listen, Kevin Durant made a statement right at the beginning of the playoffs. I'm about to show you people who I am, right? And what has he done? He's showed everybody who he is. He's been unbelievable in these playoffs. But the net effect for Golden State has been a whole lot more isolation basketball. And what happens with isolation basketball is, especially in a team with all that talent, it becomes an epidemic. So if Durant's playing all that ISO, all of a sudden you want to get Klay involved? He looks to get Klay involved and had the ball to Klay on the low post. They ran some ISO for Klay. And so ISO becomes something that you just, it kind of spirals out of control, and it was really something that kind of let Houston hang in the series a little bit. As soon as Durant wasn't there anymore, they went back to their old system, and you saw, you know, Klay and Curry moving off the ball. You know, the elevator play was back in play all of a sudden, where you're sliding in between two screens, and they just look better that way. Listen, defensively, they happened to play an excellent game in Game 6 against Houston. And to be fair to Kevin Durant, he's been very good defensively in the playoffs, and so I don't know that they're going to be better that way. I think that's where Portland's going to be able to kind of hunt them down a little bit. But there's no doubt that There is a togetherness about this team in the absence of Durant that just isn't there when he's there. And listen, I think that what we see, Kevin Durant has felt there for a very long time. I think it's an awkward fit for him. Ultimately, they come away with another title, or if they don't come away with another title, I think the version that we're going to see of the Golden State Warriors going forward is going to be the one we see in this series in the absence of Kevin Durant, because I don't think he's going to come back. But I agree, Channing, they just play more together on the offensive end of the floor without Durant out there.
Brian Geltzeiler is with us. You hear him on NBA Radio, on SiriusXM. You see him on NBA TV all the time. Now, the East, which starts tomorrow, I am so torn on this. I enjoy watching Giannis, and I enjoy watching Kawhi. We celebrated Kawhi for 4 hours yesterday. We're a damn radio station in South Florida. We celebrated Kawhi for 4 hours yesterday. That shot was ridiculous. What do you see happening in the East?
Listen, I actually think Milwaukee's going to win this series, and I don't think it's going to be that difficult. Let me ask you guys this, all right? When's the last time you saw Kawhi Leonard take 39 shots in a game? I'll answer the question for you. The answer's never. And the reason that he never has is because he's never had to. He all of a sudden, in a Game 7 at home, had to take 39 shots in a game. Well, why was that? Because Kyle Lowry got gun-shy, and Kyle Lowry is a guy that's had plenty of playoff failures and didn't want another one on his resume. Pascal Siakam, quite frankly, wet his pants out there. He couldn't handle the pressure of a Game 7 at all. Marc Gasol, for as well as he played defensively, is an older player and didn't really have a lot of gas in the tank to help on the offensive end of the floor. Didn't even have Danny Green on the floor because he couldn't hit a three. Quite frankly, Ibaka was the only guy that gave him any kind of assistance out there. And this is not the most together team in the world. As much as people, Kawhi is right now the best player still alive here in the playoffs. Giannis is a really close second, And so when you look at what Kawhi had to do to lift this team, which isn't such a connected together team, to where they had to get to, they're walking into a spot with a really, really together connected team, a team that's playing at a high level on both ends of the floor, a team that, I want you to think about this, just got their best ball handler back in Malcolm Brogdon, who is a glue guy for this group in a variety of ways. I've looked at Milwaukee all year and felt like they were going to be a regular season phenomenon. I am so impressed with what they did in the Boston series. It is not easy to do that to Boston at all. And granted, Kyrie Irving spontaneously combusted out there and deciding he didn't want to pass anybody the basketball, but that's kind of because Milwaukee broke him. And I look at Milwaukee here, it's because what Milwaukee can do to Toronto is they can play a really athletic lineup that's a very big small ball lineup with Giannis and Mirotic up front, with Middleton, Bledsoe, and Brogdon. That's a very tough athletic five for Toronto to match up with. I actually think Milwaukee's going to win this series in five. I really do. I'd be shocked if Toronto got two games. I think it all ends here for the Raptors. And listen, Kawhi to me has nothing to do with Kawhi Leonard. They just won a series against Philadelphia where they were not the better team. They won a series against Philadelphia because they had the best player head and shoulders above anybody on the Sixers. And they're not going to have it head and shoulders here. Kawhi, I do think's a little better than Giannis right now, but there's not so much separation there that in terms of the chemistry, what's connected on those teams. Because here's the other thing you got to realize. You're going to see a lot more of Bach at five in this series. Marc Gasol is a guy who you're not just going to see a ton of, because what does Brook Lopez do? Brook Lopez hangs 25 feet from the hoop firing up threes. You know, the Marc Gasol strength in that Philly series was the fact that he could protect the rim and make life really hard on Joel Embiid, and he did that really well. There's no player like that in the series for him to match up on, and that's going to hurt them in a variety of ways, too. This tough matchup for the Raptors, I think.
So with that thought, because we were talking about what it would take to keep Kawhi in Toronto, knowing he's a free agent after this year. If they do lose this series, is that it? Does Kawhi leave? Do they have to go to the championship? What keeps Kawhi in Toronto?
I think that if going to the finals would make Kawhi seriously consider staying. I believe that. I think if they lose this series, for lack of a better term, Crowder, he's out of there like poof through a goose, man. I think everything that I hear is that he wants to be in L.A. playing for the Clippers. He just bought a $13 million house down on the water there. That's going to be a situation where I think he really wants to be with the Clippers. Now, again, I think the Raptors, even if they lose in this series, he's going to meet with them. He's going to sit and talk to them. And I know Masai Ujiri has certainly built a very nice relationship with Kawhi and with Kawhi's family. Got to be careful. It's not Kawhi's group. It's not Kawhi's camp, guys. Kawhi's family is who surrounds him and who represents him. And Masai's done a great job there. But here's Masai's big problem. Masai can't guarantee he's going to be there for the length of the contract. You know, his name is looming large in the rumors on who's going to take the Wizards GM job. And so that's something that certainly could hold up here, because it's really hard to sell a guy like Kawhi Leonard, who I know the San Antonio fans who were bagging on me on Twitter last night, 10 ways coming and going. The San Antonio fans don't see it this way. This is a really, really loyal guy that had loyalty violated in him in San Antonio. And a loyal guy like that does not want to get burned again. And I do think in the end, especially with Masai's name being out there and plenty of rumors to be able to go in other locations, I think he's going to trust the organizational structure of the Clippers a heck of a lot more. Plus, let's face it, there ain't no beach in Toronto, guys.
Yeah, you can't compete with that. Brian Geltzeiler is with us. Follow him on Twitter at HoopsCritic. Before we run out of time, I think if I remember correctly, when Crowder unveiled the MJ theory on me, I didn't think anybody really bought that he was suspended by the NBA because gambling and the news was going to come out. I just thought he got tired of playing basketball. I think we had you on a day or two after we had that conversation,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And I think you surprised me, Geltzy, by thinking that maybe there was something to that rumor.
No.
You said no.
I said no.
Oh, okay. All right, good.
I said no. I didn't believe that.
Okay, good.
That's not a theory I ascribe to.
Right. Me neither. I'm not a conspiracy theorist, but I have to ask, because tonight is the NBA lottery, the draft lottery, the ping pong balls. We've all heard about the frozen envelope before. Crowder was asking yesterday, is there any kind of benefit to the NBA in fixing where the ping pong balls land?
Because the marquee teams and marquee cities would help, you know, the league exponentially.
And again, I don't buy any of this stuff. I'm not a conspiracy theorist. I think too many people would have too much to risk for not enough gain. But what is your quick thought on that?
Well, first of all, I think the league would have mixed emotions if it ends up being the Knicks or the Lakers that end up with that number one pick, because they don't want to have to fend off the conspiracy theories either. Because the one thing that makes this a little harder for the league is Tim Donaghy. You know what I mean? Like, that stuff is... So when you want to tell people, oh, the conspiracies are ridiculous in the NBA, they're going to point to Donaghy. And that's a tough thing for the league to handle and deal with. With that said, I think you're correct. If Zion ends up in New York, that's going to be a major boon. But I'll tell you, forgetting about all that stuff, guys, I think how this top three plays out is going to be incredibly interesting regarding what happens draft week, obviously, and in July with trades. There's no guarantee that any of these teams that get into certainly the top two with Morant and Zion Williamson, that they're going to necessarily keep these picks or keep these players. You know, it's, you know, first of all, I will tell you this, if the Knicks end up with the one or two pick, I think the Pelicans would be very interesting in discussing Anthony Davis with them, with that as a lead piece. And I think that's something the Knicks are going to have their eye on. So that's interesting to me. If Phoenix ends up with the number one pick, who has a desperate need for John Morant, what are they going to do? And what's going to happen there? More than that, if the Knicks end up with the number two pick, and from everything we understand, the Knicks are pretty likely to bring in Kyrie Irving here as a free agent. That's something that they're very confident they're going to be able to do. Well, if that's the case, what are they going to do with the two? Listen, you talk to people around the league, and as much as people like R.J. Barrett, they're calling this a two-player draft. So Morant is the consensus number two, and I agree with it, by the way. So what do you do at two there? So there's that, to me, beyond, forget the conspiracy theories and stuff, the intrigue of who ends up with these picks and what happens from there. And then here's the other thing. What if the Pelicans, for example, end up with the number one pick? Does Anthony Davis all of a sudden say, hey, wait a second, David Griffin and Zion Williamson, where the hell am I going, right? So there's so many different incarnations of what can happen in trade markets and regarding what happens in what's going to be the craziest summer in the history of the NBA. I truly believe that coming up this summer. So that, to me, is really, that's the compelling subplot beyond I'm not buying into the conspiracy stuff.
Well, the Heat have a 1% chance at the number one pick, so that's what we're hoping for down here, Geltzy.
Listen, guys, I will tell you, I love the way they've spread out the lottery odds. And yes, it's a 1% chance. It's a 1% chance for the Lakers as well. But I've been laughing a lot at the Knicks fans, because it's almost like people don't understand. Like, if you had been the worst team in the league last year, you had a 25% chance. I can understand getting a little excited about that. it's fucking 14%. And it's the same as the Suns and it's the same as the Cavs. All of a sudden, you're just, and you had a bad year, you're entitled to Zion Williamson? Come on. Come on, you know what I mean? So that's it's watching Knicks fans get disappointed tonight. Maybe the kind of the big thrill, okay, from what I see in the lottery night.
Right, that's a good payoff right there for everybody in South Florida. All right, Brian Geltzeiler, follow him on Twitter at HoopsCritic. Listen to him on SiriusXM NBA Radio as well. Thank you for making time for us, Geltz. Always enjoy it.
Always my pleasure, guys. Take care.
There you go. Brian Geltzeiler. In fact, we're going to talk a little bit more about the NBA draft lottery tonight because Ira Winderman is going to jump on with us next. And he can give us the Miami Heat perspective. And
1%, baby.
Listen, I mean, crazier things have happened. 16-1 in the NCAA yes. tournament a couple seasons ago. So maybe we're the who was that? Was that the Loyola Marymount team?
Believe so.
Yeah.
That's what Chuck, right?
Maybe,
Dr.
Yeah.
Chuck.
Yeah, maybe we're them. All right. Well, Ira Winderman covers the NBA and the Miami Heat for the Sun Sentinel. This is a night. Tonight is a night that could change the entire fortune of any NBA franchise, including the Miami Heat, although, like we just said to Geltz, only a 1% chance. But Ira Winderman will break it down for us when we come back.
All around the world, to the beach.
See, I know the Curtis Blow version, but this is who?
This is Jermaine Dupri.
Jermaine Dupri, yeah. That's Curtis Blow back.
This is when he got a little Bow Wow on the mouth.
Right, yeah. Right.
Oh, that movie, Like Mike.
Yep. Yeah, right. There you go.
We met Lil Nas X yesterday.
Not a big fan.
Not a little dude, though.
Not a nice dude, either.
You know, when I saw the picture, I posted the picture on Instagram. Me, you, Falero, and Lil Nas X. I put a Radio Mark Hockman. I was probably gone by now. But I put it up last night. But when I looked at it, he was nicer than I thought. He was smiling. We were the ones that were like stoic.
Wasn't. He put that on us because remember he didn't say a word to us and then the guy said 1, 2, 3 and then he did the video, the face for the video.
Oh, right, yeah.
And then as soon as the guy
said, had already had the life sucked out of us by him because he, like, it was weird, yeah.
No bye-bye, no appreciate it, y'all. He got right on his phone and started tweeting or Insta something. But man, I'm not a fan.
I mean, I didn't put my grill in. Why'd he have to take time out to put his grill in?
Thinks he's special.
Ira Winderman is on the Toyota of Hollywood hotline right now. Covers the NBA and the Miami Heat for the Sun Sentinel. Ira Winderman is powered by Anajar and Levine Accident Attorneys. Call 1-800-747-FREE, 1-800-747-3733. Ira, I'm assuming, do you know who Lil Nas X is?
Hold on, let me get my grill in first. Okay, now I'm good, yes.
Do you know who he is?
Yes. Well, I know, I was in the office yesterday, so I knew that he was coming in. I knew you were trying to infect him so he can cancel the next 6 days on his tour.
I did. I tried to get him sick, I think. Unbeknownst to me, I had no idea that this head cold was going to get so bad. Hey, if we're just talking and we go, name the five best players in the NBA, I'm telling Crowder that Anthony Davis is not going to be in my top five. Is he in yours?
Oh, yeah, I think with the kind of year he had, I always look at who can give me 50 points unexpectedly on a given night, and I have him up there, I'd say, with Durant, with Kawhi, with Giannis, and probably with Harden is probably the group I would have just off the top of my head right now. Obviously, we know Harden and Giannis are competing for MVP, so they'd have to be on any of our lists. I think Durant, because he can score over anyone, I think has to be on your list. Kawhi, just the two-way kind of player he is. And I probably would put I probably would put Anthony Davis over Steph Curry just because Anthony Davis and his length can, I mean, he's had some remarkable nights. So, yeah, I probably would have him top five.
And Ira, the conversation started because we were talking about if a team does win the lottery tonight and get Zion Williamson, should they trade him for a proven piece? Zion might not be as good as KD, Giannis, you know, Kawhi. He might not be that. Would you trade a number one pick for a proven NBA star?
Well, I think for one of the rare times, I think Hawk had a real cogent point when he mentioned...
Really? Hold on. I got to listen to this. I don't remember what I said.
I may want to put this on a promo. in that he could become a free agent in a year. So, Channing, as much as as much as you could definitely say that a team like New York, if they're going to get Durant and going to get Kyrie, look, they're all in for the moment. They don't want to wait on anyone. They don't want this guy to get used to the NBA three-point shot or NBA defense. So you can make an argument that if you have Anthony Davis, Kevin Durant, and Kyrie Irving, you might not only be the Eastern Conference favorite, you might be the overall number one favorite to win the championship. So if New York is looking to build one year and make one splash, yeah, I would do the trade. If New York is saying, you know what, KD and Kyrie are getting a little longer in the tooth, not necessarily older players, but have sort of been around now for a while. If I keep, you know, Williamson, I'm also building a bridge for the future. So I think it's a matter of what you want. If you're saying, we're all in for the moment, let the future dictate itself, I would make the trade. If you're taking a longer view for sustained success, I probably would back off of it.
All right, can you explain to everybody exactly how the NBA draft lottery works tonight? Like, who should get the number one pick, and how exactly will it fall? What are the Heat's chances?
I mean, there's no overall favorite. The NBA, what they did this year is they flattened the odds this year so that the three worst records in the league all have, I think it's about a 14% chance, 14% chance of getting the number one pick. So the three teams with the worst record in the league were the New York Knicks, Cleveland Cavaliers, and Phoenix Suns. They all have 140 slips, lottery number slips, out of 1,001. What happens is there are ping pong balls 1 through 14. You will not see this on TV. This is done an hour before the game show on TV. And four balls come to the top of a hopper. Whoever holds that slip with those four numbers gets the number one pick. The process is repeated for the number two, the number three, and number four pick. After that, it goes by inverse order of record. So you have a chance. Every team in the lottery has a chance for the number one, the number two, the number three, or the number four picks. For the Heat, the numbers are not great. They have a 1% chance for number one, 1.1 for number two, 1.2 for number three, 1.4% chance for number four. So overall, about a 4.7% chance of getting a top four pick. Otherwise, they can't land numbers 5 through 12. They can either stay where they are at number 13, a 90.6% chance, or they can go one spot back for about a 4.6% chance if Sacramento beats the odds and moves up. So, again, the odds are the Heat have a 95% chance of not moving up in the lottery. They have a slight chance. It should be, if the odds hold, that the Knicks, Cavaliers, or Phoenix, one of them would get it. But here's the thing. When you draw four balls to the top, any of the slips that are given out to the various teams have as good of a chance. It's just a matter that those people hold more, just like you would increase, although please don't do it, folks, you would increase your chances to win the Florida lottery if you held 140 tickets instead of 10 tickets. That's basically how it plays out.
All right, so tonight, I mean, look, there's a small possibility, but I said this at the first segment of the show today. If the Miami Heat miraculously got the number one pick,
yes,
I say they are the team that would immediately be closest to winning a championship in their said sport. I think the only team locally I can make a case for would maybe be the Panthers. But that's the dearth of teams that we have down here right now, right?
Yeah, because the Panthers have basically had so many lottery picks that even if you agree or disagree with the Barkov or the Ekblad picks, they've sort of loaded up on them. So we keep saying this is their time, but it never seems to be their time. You know, maybe they'll get Panarin or Bobrovsky from Columbus. Otherwise, it's sort of the treadmill. Yeah, the Heat would move up there. All of a sudden, everyone would look a little bit better because there would be another really good player on the court. All of a sudden, you could say, well, now maybe we package a couple of our young guys, Winslow, Richardson, and Adebayo, and go for it now a little bit more and say, take two of our guys, give us one slightly better guy, and you upgrade the roster. And here's the great thing about it, that Zion Williamson would arrive on a rookie-scale contract. So for a team in salary cap and luxury tax hell, all of a sudden you got this very nice, usable contract that is making everything a lot more affordable for you. I think if the Heat get one of the top three picks, there's three studs that it sort of looks like in this draft. There's Zion Williamson, there's Ja Morant, terrific shooting guard, and there's R.J. Barrett. Those are the top three. After that, you're sort of looking at a next tier of players. So even one of the top three won't be as sexy, but it could really make a difference when it comes to having a chance to get back in the playoffs and make a playoff splash.
And it's a different game right now. You're talking about these guards with Ja Morant and R.J. Barrett. Like, is there any chance that they go over Zion?
You know what? Zion can do that all. I think the change in game, Channing, is that you have to have perimeter skills. You have to have skills at least close to the three-point line. So don't let that big body fool you. He has that also. All the big men have added that. So no, I can't fathom a team trading away or bypassing Zion Williamson. And Pat Riley has always gone sort of with the chalk. I remember after they lost out on Derrick Rose and they went with the number two pick, he was talking for a while, oh, I like Kevin Love, I like Russell Westbrook, I like Brooke Lopez. End of the day, he took the chalk at number two, for better or worse, who was Michael Beasley. The last time the Heat were in the lottery and had a good shot to do something was number 10 in 2015. They didn't even work out Justice Winslow, but when he fell to them, they went for him. Same thing in 2002 with Caron Butler. They've pretty much been the chalk team that when you start seeing the mock drafts and you see where the Heat draft, if any of those quality guys from earlier slip down to them, there's a chance that there are decisions made for them. Cam Reddish, to me, is sort of the slipping guy this year. If he slips to the Heat, I think they take him.
What do you think of Crowder's idea where instead of ping pong balls, lottery fashion, you have carnival games that would determine which team picks where? It'd be like, you know, Zoe faces off against Jamie Gertz and throw the ping pong ball in the goldfish bowl.
Well, I think, again, what would happen there, and I can't believe I'm answering this seriously.
I do appreciate the serious tone of your answer, though.
Yeah, so it's like maybe I should back off here a little bit, but I think you would have to start looking at your general manager and asking yourself this question, how good is he at skee ball? Does he know how to bounce the ball off the side and get it into the middle? So it really would change the equation.
Right, because we were kind of spitballing on this, like if you're doing a tug of war, well, then you stick with Alonzo Mourning. If you're doing the ping pong ball in the goldfish bowl, you might go to karate, smaller hands.
Smaller hands, a little bit more delicate. Again, I think the skee ball would be the tiebreaker. So, again, who's going to be able to roll it off the side and sort of spin it into the middle? I think all of a sudden you'd have tryouts for your front office going in a completely different direction. I could not agree more with you guys.
Could you write one of those in your Ask Ira? Just write Mark Boca Raton and, you know, is the NBA considering switching the NBA draft lottery to a series of carnival games?
Yes, as soon as Don Bailey Jr. does it in the opener against the Gators, I will follow up. You have my word on that.
Fair enough.
Let me get away from y'all's narrative and get to the finals. How do you see these conference finals going, Ira?
You know, it's really interesting, Channing. It's a letdown for me. I was compelled by those two East series, especially Toronto-Philly. Of course, we all were compelled by Houston-Golden State. Honestly, I don't care if I miss some of Portland-Golden State. It just seems like a letdown, sort of a foregone conclusion to me. And as much as Toronto-Milwaukee, I think, will be a really good series, it just doesn't have the stakes to me that the other series did, and impending free agents and everything like that. I think Milwaukee has the greater depth of talent against Toronto, but so did Philadelphia. So maybe Kawhi steps up one more time. Obviously, Milwaukee's a considerable favorite. I can see why. And I just, even without Kevin Durant, I don't think they need Kevin Durant. First of all, you ask yourself this question, Western Conference Finals. Steph Curry and Klay Thompson versus C.J. McCollum and Damian Lillard. Which backcourt is better, guys?
I would go Steph Curry and...
I think most people would.
Yeah. I love Dame Lillard, though.
So here's, and I love the two guys in Portland, here's the thing. Who's the next best player in the series? Well, it's clearly, I'm not counting Kevin Durant, it's Draymond Green. Who's the next best player in the series? You can make an argument for Andre Iguodala that even without Kevin Durant, Golden State would seem to have more than enough to take care of a sort of glad-to-be-there kind of team in Portland. To me, the real letdown of these playoffs was that Houston-Golden State was a conference semifinal and didn't get there. So I'm going Milwaukee-Golden State. And then, you know what? I want to see what Kevin Durant comes back like. That's what he'll need. He'll need the Portland series to regain his legs if he can. If he's healthy, I'd still feel comfortable with Golden State again.
Wouldn't it be great, though, if Golden State goes out to a 2-0 lead on Portland and Kevin Durant comes back and then they get housed the next two games and they can have the discussion whether the Warriors are better without KD?
And the way the Warriors play, it wouldn't surprise me because that's what they do. They do just enough to win, and then they sort of get full of themselves. We saw it in the first round against the Clippers. To a degree, we saw it in the second round against the Rockets. That's what the Warriors are. The Warriors realize this is hard. How little do we have to do to get through this? Because after these four consecutive runs, we are exhausted. So it would not surprise me if that plays out that way, that they take care of business at Oracle, their final season at home in Oakland, and then they go to Portland and sort of full of themselves and say, okay, let's take our foot off the gas. KD's coming back. He'll carry us, lollygag a little, get themselves in trouble in at least one of the games there. Yeah, that would not surprise me.
Do you play carnival games if you're at a carnival?
Well, when you have a son, you have a kid, you play all the games. You keep trying to smash that damn frog into the pot until the thing ain't flying anymore. So yeah, I've played them all. And the toughest thing you do when you have a kid is to try to explain to them how they're rigged. And all your kid is saying, I need another dollar. I need another dollar. And you realize the gambling addiction, that's where it starts right there. That until the basketball that's too big goes through the rim that's too small, the kids just don't get the whole thing.
Do you play that, though? Because that's the why. I mean, you cover basketball for a living. Do you play the hoops at the carnival? Knowing that, I mean, you have to hit it right on target for that thing to go in.
That, and the ball has a big weight, so it's uneven, and it wobbles as it goes up there. You take a shot or two, but you don't sort of overdo yourself. I know my brother once went with us, and he was so trying to impress my son. My brother's the banker. He's not the basketball writer. He's going to do it. I swear to God, his car was like repoed the next day trying to get the ball through there.
Do you have a wet shot?
Excuse me?
I say, do you have a wet shot?
Oh, boy.
What does that mean?
Yeah, like
can you shoot well?
Yeah, can you drain them from all over the court?
My heart drops.
Excuse me for your kid lingo there. I'm one of these older guys who can stand in the corner and make three-pointers forever, but apparently the game when you play now involves running and jumping and other factors. That's sort of where I get lost.
So you do have a wet shot.
Oh, I've been draining threes going back to the Brooklyn Queens YMCA Boys Club Leagues.
Would you have guessed that, Crowder?
Oh, he looks like J.J. Redick a little bit.
He looks like J.J. Walker.
True story. I once had to guard this guy, and I hope he's not listening, but named Ed Chestnut, who looked like what he sounded. Now remember, this is fifth grade. We're all like 5'2" or whatever. I swear this guy was like 7'9". So they figured, you know what? Just front him. We're not going to stop him anyway. And I remember draining 3 3-pointers over Ed Chestnut and feeling like I had the greatest game of my career. And I was only outscored 32-9.
Ed Chestnut, take a step back. I don't know what just happened.
Get him,
there.
Ira.
There you go. Thank you, Ira.
Wet shot. Thank you, guys.
Boy, you almost. I got so scared.
You weren't curious if you had a wet shot?
I just didn't expect it, and then I thought you said
did
something
you honestly,
else.
Did you think that Ira could drain threes?
No.
Yeah.
Yeah, it seems like one of those guys, right?
Because he loves gym basketball.
Rat. Yeah, so gym rat and just firing up three after three after three.
I love basketball. Am I going to drive?
Right.
Am I going to dunk?
Where do you think Ira lives? In the paint or in the perimeter?
Way outside.
All right, let's take a quick break and we'll come right back.
Radio.com. Radio.com.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, O'Reilly Auto Parts.